Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comics, books, and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comic Extension. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Hello. Cole Hornaday.
Hi.
Hey, and Chris Casso.
Hello.
How is everybody this warm evening?
Well, we were discussing dark magic, which, you know, is it, I mean, let's translate. What are you talking about, dark magic or dark as in, like, the magic place where you keep your magic boat magic?
Oh. The magic harbor?
Where you dock your magic so you can
dock magic,
run some errands and not have your magic run amok.
I'm partial to necromancy, so
okay.
I guess we're going with the first one.
Okay.
I'm actually surprised there's not a comic book character already called Dock Magic.
I'm sure there is.
There's got to be somewhere.
Oh, Doc as in D-O-C.
Yeah, like Doc Ock.
Or Doctor.
Doc Magic.
I'm sure there's a Doc Magic.
But now I just want a sentient boat that's also a magician. And the whole series is about the...
Row your magic boat.
Is it going to be the Naglfar? So it's just going to be a boat made of sentient...
Bless your heart. You actually remember how to pronounce that.
Sentient toenails.
The toenails.
Of doom.
Mm-hmm. But you remember that because you actually... Didn't you used to listen to a death metal band?
Yeah, it's a black metal band called Naglfar. It's what I consider like pop black
Maple
metal.
Bar?
It's like real catchy for metal.
Remember we were talking about the Norse mythology book that Neil Gaiman wrote boat of nail clippings that
we had such a good thing that we did not record. We had like the most hilarious moment that didn't
Recorded it. I recorded everything.
Did we?
No, I didn't.
You teased.
Anyway, if there is a magical Doc Magic Boat, I think it would be a DC character, and it'll probably be more expensive these days because DC is no longer holding the line at $2.99. They are raising Batman, Suicide Squad, Wonder Woman, Detective Comics, Green Lantern, The Flash, Hal Jordan, and the Green Lantern Corps, Harley Quinn, and Injustice to $3.99, and they will stop providing complimentary digital codes.
Yeah.
Interesting. We're going to go back and be exclusive to print. We're not going to do digital. Why aren't we doing digital?
They go back and forth on
they
that.
They
tried
forth.
That with New 52, and then
they want people to pay.
Yeah, of course they do.
Digital.
Coincidentally, not coincidentally, but to time out with this, a lot of Marvel new number ones, because there's so many of them, are all $5 each or $6.
Jeez.
So everything's getting very expensive.
Are they monthly or bi-monthly?
Yes.
The number ones are like one shot, but like...
Both are
the
applicable.
Price points. I think they will drop back down to $3.99 after that.
Yeah. It's always a rise and fall, and it...
Yeah. Is this... Is there? Can you put your finger on a cause? Is it the paper tariffs? Is it?
I don't
remember
think...
you talking about that a couple of weeks ago off mic.
Yeah, I don't think we've actually hit the point of the paper tariffs being a problem, but I think the industry's nervous about it becoming a problem.
Okay,
so they might be trying.
So they need to bilk us for all the money they can right now,
or get us ready for it to become.
Oh, okay, so we don't have the sticker shock.
Yeah,
dude, we live in Seattle. We have sticker shock every day.
What are you talking about? I just paid a quarter for a comic. Uh-huh. It's also like...
You didn't have a cover, buddy.
DC is... It did too have a cover. DC is... they're seeing their sales slump a little bit. Aside from Action Comics 1000 and the biggest Batman titles, most of their titles are under 50,000 per month, with some of them even going so low as to be under 30,000. So they're tightening the belt... Yeah. Which might explain the no more free digital downloads and the raise in the price. It's basically, I guarantee you, somebody at Warner Brothers is like, DC, you need to start making some more money.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're going to be canceling. They've already canceled a few titles, so they're getting ready to cancel more as well. So this is just part of that tightening the belt action.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know. So you
how are like the titles that I rattled off at the beginning that nobody was paying attention to, are they big sellers? Like do you feel that your customer base is going to still pay $2 a month more
for Batman? They always will. Suicide Squad's actually just a poor seller for us just overall.
Wonder Woman has gone down since the original
James
teams.
Robinson took over, and it's just been going down since then.
So that might be a cutoff point for people.
Yeah, so they need to kind of figure out their teams on that. Green Lantern, there's rumors of Vendetti leaving the title.
That's what I've been hearing.
And them canceling one of the titles.
I thought Hal Jordan was being canceled.
On the chopping
block.
So that could be another condensing action that they're doing. Because since there won't be two titles fighting for that high-end price, then it's just back to normal with paying a little extra for the one monthly title or one weekly title instead of two weekly titles. So, yeah.
Weekly title. How do they maintain that?
Oh, bi-weekly. Sorry. Okay. Sorry, sorry. Yeah. We were just talking a little bit earlier. There's a Twitter thread from a comic creator that works a lot at Marvel, basically talking about how common it is now for creators to have high anxiety issues and panic attacks because of the current scheduling trends of Marvel and DC.
Mm. Right.
And it blew up into a very long thread with a lot of familiar artistic talents chiming in. So yeah, the bi-weekly.
Were they saying similar things? Were they saying supportive things?
They're all supportive. Getting very
a lot of people drink alcohol. but yeah, a lot of like, giving advice, you know, about like what I do, what, you know, what works for some people.
Two parts vodka, one part soda.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that a drink? Vodka soda?
I'll try it. So.
Okay.
The important part is it's two parts to one part alcohol. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's, I mean, that's, I'm assuming that was the advice these people are giving over on Twitter.
Well, and also probably some like physical self-care because your hands will cramp up and you will have, you know, perhaps long-term problems if you're not taking care of yourself.
Right.
George Perez has always had a long history of bad physical problems because of how detailed his art is. So there's a lot of other talents that are experiencing the same thing that they have to do it more often against more grueling deadlines at times. So,
crazy. And a lot of these artists are probably working on multiple titles too. And so,
some are, yeah.
Wacky. Anyway, Ta-Nehisi Coates is shooting Black Panther into space.
Black Panther in space.
Were you going to review that? Because I totally forgot I read it.
I mean, we could double review it if you want. I figured I burned my Black Panther ship. I've just done it so many times that I'm like, it's good.
Oh, no.
You're welcome.
Was that ship also made out of, like, panther claws?
Absolutely. Yeah, vibranium, so you can't really burn
anyway,
it down.
Sorry, Ben. Black Panther.
That's
it's
all I wanted to say.
Okay. I have read it. And I think it's really, really interesting, and I'm looking forward to where it goes because it really, really plays with your head. In the latest episode of The Panel Jumper, we talk about that it's forthcoming that you can see at The Panel Jumper Live on June 22nd, 8 p.m. at West of Lenin. We talk about Roger Zelazny's novel, Lord of Light, and my interpretation of that book was it's very cagey in that you don't know where it's set. You are familiar with these godlike beings if you're familiar with, you know, the Hindu pantheon, but it could be set in the ancient past. It could be in the distant future, and that's the way this Black Panther in space.
Yeah,
book
you
feels.
Don't know exactly.
You know the characters, you know, but the contexts are all messed up. It's not a what if story, to my knowledge. It's not an Elseworlds story because that.
Yeah,
easy,
just because there's certain people that show up, it makes me think that it's not too far off from what our current run.
Right.
But you know. Why has there been a mysterious world, you know,
well, I gotta
planet
admire
Wakanda
Mr. Coates that, for take saying I'm gonna shake this all up here and try to do and just go out into outer space, literally. I'm really curious. I had a great time with it.
I hope Acuna stays on it too.
Yeah, he's really interesting artist. Really interesting.
Yeah, the article that I posted to in the show notes really complimented his style.
Mm-hmm. He's got a big fan base, I think.
This past week, Doctor Strange number one launched. And
in space!
It's in space.
In space.
Yep. What? Yep. Is this so a trend we're going to be seeing in Marvel?
I think everybody just realized they don't want to be on Earth anymore.
GTFO.
And also, I mean, who else misses space? I do. Mm-hmm. So does my husband. He's like, best issue ever! Like, he texted me today. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, as a culture, you know, we don't dream of space the way the previous generations did. We don't dream of space flight. We don't dream of going to other planets. And I know there's a lot of reasons why, as a culture, it's just not as vital to our popular consciousness as it once was. You know, one of the primary points being is that we were in competition with the Russians to get to outer space.
Right.
But, you know, once we got there, it was like...
Budget cuts, and then it went privatized.
Yeah.
And it went
and,
out of the...
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, frankly, maybe we'll be safer exploring space, you know, with a through with a corporate privatization. I don't like the idea because I do believe in... I'm enough of a socialist. I do believe that it should be of the people for the people. But... You know, it doesn't work that way in the great United States of America.
All I'm saying is that if Jeff Bezos gets his way and mm-hmm. forms a space force, and if that doesn't have Prime Now on it, and I can't get a
I'm going to say, yeah, what do Prime members get for that?
I know. If I get a, I want to get my cable same day up in space.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys ever wonder, though, that with when we, you know, because we've all lived with this influx of, you know, for all intents and purposes, space operas, that, you know, is there a part of us that just says it's just not going to be that exciting, or actually it's going to be more deadly, and just the most
like
basic comforts are going to be
like
lost to us?
Deadly is more, yeah. you know,
yeah.
possible.
Right.
I mean, we'd have to get way far advanced to get to not dying in space.
Right.
We're
going to
find
so.
Every possible space STD we can.
Yep. That's
space
right.
TV. Anyway, speaking of Jeff Bezos
Americans.
And Amazon.
Yes.
Amazon is creating four new creator-owned titles as part of their Comixology Originals line. It's going to be exclusive online, but there's also going to be a print-on-demand feature for these. And it's drawing quite some ire from a bunch of other people. The editor of Fantagraphics, I believe, has just called this a blatant grab, strengthening its digital and print market using its inherent monolithic market advantages.
It's
so Eric
good,
Reynolds of Fantagraphics is not too happy about this.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I wouldn't go maybe with money grab, but definitely they're trying to up their digital game.
Yeah,
yeah. This
right?
is comics.
I mean,
there's no money to be had.
Yeah, I know. I mean, sure, if they make money, great.
Right.
Yeah, no, they're experimenting, seeing what they can do to change the format and the media, and then if they can get the first flag planted on something and that's going to expand in the future,
mm-hmm.
more power to them.
Yeah, but it's Bezos. I mean, he's going to learn that, you know, comics is a... is a sieve, and he's going to abandon it, you know, before too long anyway, because it's not, it looks great. It looks colorful and exciting and
you
can't make any
money. I kind of look at him as like Terminator 2, like the liquid mercury guy.
Sure.
Like he's
yeah.
going to find another form and like keep doing it, you know, like he'll mm-hmm. adapt. Like mm-hmm. a,
Jeff, yeah. let us introduce you to this really cool art form. It's been happening around you all the time. It's called Seattle Fringe Theater.
The number one thing I took from that, I can't remember the exact name of it, but there's like a subdivision at Amazon that helps with like the licensing and getting like the rights to over to movies. That's where it is. There, this is all a a pod that they're just kind of throwing things in, and they're
yeah.
like, what can we finally make a movie out of?
That makes sense.
That's going to be an Amazon original movie. We got it first, so they're harvesting the organs ahead of time.
Did you guys watch the new Tick?
Yeah, I did.
Did you watch the? I watched all the first season.
Yep.
And I haven't started on the second season yet. I did enjoy it, but there was some aspect of charm that I thought was missing, and I have never been able to quite put my thumb on it yet. And of course, I'm a big fan of the original comic, big fan of the cartoon. Well, the cartoon I think is just timeless. The original TV series
has some high points,
had
some low points,
had some real low points. But there's this. There's this aspect of maybe childlike wonder that is missing in the new one that I...
Well, at some point, maybe Ben Ellen decided it himself, or maybe somebody pushed him over there, but they were like, darken it.
Yeah.
And that's the weirdest thing
obvious.
To do to the Tick.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
This is a very Deadpool-like assassin character that like, wow, this is... You just brought down the room tone.
Zack yeah. Snyder presents yeah. the Tick.
Yeah. I'm sorry,
that's nowhere near as bad. No, that was kind of where we were going anyway.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, we're not big digital comics people here
not
at
really.
Perfect Bound Podcast
not
because
really.
We are inside a physical comic book store.
We may be
Give
biased.
Us some money.
So anyway, that's happening. Speaking of comics you can buy, there's a Japanese metal band called Baby Metal, which
yes.
if you've seen any of their videos or heard any of their music, you cannot help but be charmed and mystified at the same time.
They are like the perfect pop culture mashup, this collision of things where you go, no, that's not gonna, oh my god, that's awesome.
And there's a comic called Apocrypha, The Legend of Baby Metal, which I didn't realize that this was a thing, but apparently the Z2 has a line of music comics. Previous volumes have spotlighted Dan Auerbach of one of my favorite bands, the Black Keys, and DJ Paul Oakenfold, who I do not know.
I know the name, but I can't think of what he did.
Anyway, Baby Metal. If you haven't seen Baby Metal, look them up on YouTube. But their comic should be hit your retailers around October.
And also look up Lady Baby.
Oh my God! Please look up Lady Baby.
What is Lady Baby?
It's pretty much taking Baby Metal, but instead of like the third girl, you just throw in like a muscular, blonde-haired, like Swedish beefcake man, and
but he dresses like a Japanese schoolgirl.
Yeah, put him in like a like Sailor Moon gear, and then he does the growly parts while the girls do all like the poppy singies.
But he
yeah.
dances with them in the cutest way.
Oh my God, it's yeah. so good. It just really one-ups Baby Metal.
All right. Baby Metal and Lady Baby. Check them out.
I want my Lady Baby comic now.
Yeah. Yeah. Z2, where are you? Bring us Lady Baby. All right. Sci-Fi has ordered a pilot based off the Resident Alien comic Yay. From Dark Horse. When I first saw this, I thought it was based on the video game, based on the movie, based on the video game, whatever. so yeah, Resident Alien coming soon to a Sci-Fi channel near you.
Resident Alien part of the Dark Horse Presents reboot?
I think it may have had a short story in there.
Yeah, and is he an alien? Is he a local? He's an alien. A lonely alien comes to Earth, a la Man Who Fell to Earth, a la the alien from Hellboy. It's, you know, and slips into society. And does he become a doctor?
Yep.
Local country doctor.
Local country doctor.
And then he becomes a private investigator.
Nope.
No.
No.
You can let him take over. He loves the series.
Okay, great. Yep. Go. Mm-hmm.
The local doctor dies, and the sheriff goes to this guy that lives in a cabin out in the woods, who is the alien who wants to kind of stay off of everybody's map,
right.
and asks him, like, can you fill in? Because we really need your help. And the alien's like, ooh, I don't want them to be suspicious. So he goes and just becomes the town doctor, and he solves mysteries.
And he's using some sort of alien magic so people don't see the alien. Yeah,
he's
see.
Telepathic, but mostly empathic. So he can't really read minds, but he can alter the way he looks.
Yeah.
So nobody sees that he's an alien.
Okay,
right.
And so he's kind of John Jones.
Yeah.
A little bit John Jones.
Yeah. And he's obsessed
That's what I remember about it.
He's obsessed with pulp novels and crime noir.
Right.
So the fact that he can read people's emotions mean he can tell if they're lying. So he's really good at solving the local town mysteries.
So I remember reading it. It was serialized in the new Dark Horse Presents, and I couldn't keep up with that because I couldn't afford to, because that was like a, I don't know, $7 book every month, and not all the stories are worth it. But then I also felt cheated because they took all of the serialized stories and put them into contained one shots. They did that with Concrete and stuff like that. Yeah. So has there been an ongoing series?
There's been a bunch of 4-issue miniseries.
Oh, okay, cool.
So it's the BPRD formula, the Hellboy formula. Right. Like, here's a short run.
All right.
So it is really good. So I am both happy and sad about this announcement because sci-fi.
But they're doing the Deadly Class, which looked pretty good.
Yeah.
So, by the by, I just
Hopefully.
I just read the first volume of Deadly Class.
Yeah.
And I thoroughly freaking enjoyed it. I was like, where has this been?
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. I'm going to read the rest of them.
So I will highly recommend Resident Alien. It is one of my favorite books. There's only 4 volumes, so like you have no excuse.
You know, sci-fi.
Is it complete?
No,
it's ongoing. It's like each one is just its own little murder mystery.
Ah.
This would be like the perfect USA crime show, like, you know, how they just have that, what characters welcome or whatever.
Yeah.
But having a character that has empathy as a crucial aspect of their persona is really, really intriguing. I wouldn't diss on Sci-Fi Channel too hard. I did kind of like their Happy series. Adapting Grant Morris's Happy now, but what I am concerned about is it's going to be an ongoing series, and the original Happy was a 4-part mini. Mm-hmm. Also, I've read, they adapted Lev Grossman's Magicians books, and I just got done. I can't say I read it. I audibilized it, which is all I have time to do anymore.
Apparently that's considered reading these days.
No, it's not
reading. It is. Some people,
It's not reading.
Yeah.
It's listening to someone tell you a story, which is all sweet and fine and everything, but that person doesn't sound like my mom, so you know I'm just going
to be
some resistance.
You should get your mom to record books for you.
I think sci-fi is really trying to get away from that Asylum Productions, like Sharknado stuff, and trying to get more licensed property, right?
But, you know... Z Nations made them a boatload of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe they are, but
they could balance.
Yeah, but remember, this is the station that changed how they spelled sci-fi to dumb it down. So
anyway, speaking of blatant money grabs, Ada Campbell recently gave an interview to Entertainment Weekly, and Ada Campbell, as you know, is the artist for From Hell, written by Alan Moore. He says, I got a call from the publisher, and they wanted to fluff out... I'm assuming he's British, but I'm not going to do that British accent. They wanted to fluff out From Hell and do something new with it, possibly put it out again as a serial. I thought that would only work if you do something drastically new, like colorize it. At first, they were like, that's not going to work. Is it? It's always been a black and white book, and I said I'd show them a couple pages, and after that, they said, how quickly can we get this book on the shelves? Mm. And that was in January, and they're expected to put out a new colorized From Hell in September.
Well, if you've read From Hell, you'll be kind of agog if they're going to be able to put it out that quickly and do it well, because it is a massive, massive series.
He goes on, I read the interview, he goes on to talk about how he is in love with computers now, because he can now, computers have millions of colors.
I'm doing a lot of sleeping. But.
And there's also, he's going to fix a few things. He's already admitted that he's redrawn a few panels. And he's given Alan Moore an ultimatum. He's like, if you want to change anything, now is your chance. So what is that going to do? Like, I know From Hell's been out for like 30 years. What is that going to do for the book? Is it? Do you think?
I don't know.
I'm sure I'll sell some copies.
I think it's because they're just trying to cash in on Alan Moore. But
everybody is right now.
Things go through cycles where it's like, hey, look, we should renew our copyright on the Alan Moore books that we own.
Sorry.
So we can keep them. Then it'll go back to him.
Quick tangent. I just rewatched the first Guardians, and that whole sequence where they go to nowhere, which is the giant celestial god corpse that they just keep mining and ripping resources out of.
Yes.
I feel that Alan Moore is the decaying space god that everybody's just like, get into the cranial cavity.
Perfect analogy.
Accurate.
From Hell is, you know, Alan Moore, on top of being a mystic, a lunatic, a brilliant storyteller, and a grumpy, crotchety old ass man, is also an academic. And From Hell is his last word on the Jack the Ripper mystery. And I enjoyed reading it, but I don't care enough about the Jack murder mythology to like really. I read it because it was Alan Moore, and I enjoy reading what he does. But that. Each one is a perfect... How many issues was it? 10? 12? But each one is perfect bound.
It's a tome at this point.
It's a tome. It's a tome. Each one is perfect bound and has sometimes 10 to 12 endnotes because he exhaustively researched this stuff.
They're going to be putting out a new appendix soon because new developments keep arising in the Jack the Ripper murders.
Right.
And so they admit in the appendix, look, we're not saying... William Gull, I think it was William.
Yes,
is the Ripper. In fact, we probably don't even think he did it. But that's our story, and everybody has their own story.
Yeah. And he told it very, very well, and it was super duper intriguing. But you know, there is a movie adaptation of From Hell out there with Johnny Depp and I can't remember the other actor's name.
Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah, there's a couple of good people in it, and it's a watchable movie if you just don't know where. The source material.
Yeah, and I haven't read From Hell, and it was a perfectly fine movie.
You know what? I think we went and saw it in the theater together.
Maybe.
We have a lot of years together. We do. Oh, my goodness. Do we ever?
You can say that about almost every movie adaptation. If you haven't read the book, it's a surfaceable movie.
Yes, very
much. But you've got to admit, there have been times where someone will come to you and go, did you read the book? Yes. Okay, what about this? Because this is really messed up.
So, I didn't know this, but apparently there was going to be another Crow adaptation starring Jason Momoa, and there's not going to be one anymore because both he and Colin Hardy, who was going to be the director, have stepped back removed themselves from the production over creative differences, which is Hollywood for the producers.
Momoa. Momoa.
Okay, so yeah. So all you fanboys and girls out there who wanted to see another Crow reboot, it's not going to happen.
Really. I don't think anybody really did, and I don't know. I'm really sick of seeing Momoa, and I haven't seen him that much. Yeah. But
why are they trying to milk that Crow cow?
Who knows?
Because it's a familiar license. That's the way most things work. It could be, I mean, why was there a Chips movie? You know,
there was
nostalgia.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's across lots of media where people do not want to invest in new IP. Like, I just heard about it in like children's like illustrated literature or something. Like, they don't even want to invest in that stuff.
Yeah. What I think is sad about the, believe it or not, The Crow is still one, the original one is still one of my favorite movies. And no, it has not aged well at all.
Yeah, I was just going to say, have you watched it recently?
Yeah, I have.
Just keep that memory alive.
See, that's the thing. I saw that in the theaters.
Right, me too.
Yeah,
and I'm like, that's one of those things. Should I see it again? Because I remember liking it.
No, it's not an evergreen.
Okay, it's not.
There we go.
And neither is the original J.O. Barr comic book. And the J.O. Barr comic was really groundbreaking at the time. It was goth punk, uber violence, and it was kind of set us on the path of a lot of that kind of stuff. But the sad thing is that, you know, there are creators that have like maybe one or two stories in them, and sadly that's one of the few stories that J.O. Barr has in him, which I always thought was really sad. And he has ridden that Crow train. Because take a step back, there have been like four Crow movies.
Has there really been four? Yeah.
There have been like at least one. There was one TV series that was syndicated.
Wow, I dropped off a long time ago.
So that franchise. So no, it's no wonder to me that they're still working it to try to get a new adaptation of it, because you know the franchise is out there. Mm. It just would not die.
It just strikes me as funny that,
like Eric Draven, it kept rising from the dead.
Oh boy!
Come on!
It just strikes me as funny that they were like, they looked at all the previous examples and the previous actors who have all been relatively slender people, and you look at the model and they're like, let's get Beef Boy.
Exactly. That seems just so strange.
Yeah.
It's just
is it just because he looks dark because he's just covered in hair or something from his head?
He's a nit boy right now because Game of Thrones rose a star, and then Aquaman sort of like set it on its path.
The savage Aquaman.
Dare I say, put a shirt on, please.
Anyway, AMC put out a sneak peek for Preacher Season 3. Normally I wouldn't care, but because we've been reading Preacher as a group, I was fascinated to see that they finally have brought in the character of Grandma into season 3 of Preacher, as well as TC and Jody. I don't know if they were in season 2, but I might actually just jump into season 3 of Preacher just to watch
it, because
it sounds like they're going towards that storyline, the Anvil storyline.
So we'll probably be talking about spoilers, because there's something in there that seemed like a spoiler to me. So if anybody cares who's listening, just FYI.
Preacher spoilers coming up.
Because it looks like Tulip has died, and now they're going to Grandma to try to resurrect her
weird. In the trailer for season 3, somebody's like, Tulip, you look good, and she's like, yeah, I'm not dead anymore, or something like that. So it worked, but that's what they did.
Honestly, I don't remember what happened at the end of season 2.
you were the one of us who were watching that
TV
show.
You're the only one.
Yeah, I know, and you know how it is. We are so bombarded, we're so saturated with so much stuff, I can't tell you what happened.
Yep.
I'd have to go back and revisit it for half a mo. I mean, I'll watch it for 20 seconds and go, okay, yeah, no,
right, right.
But, okay. Also, Grandma looks real pretty. She should not look pretty. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, when you see what Grandma looks like in the comic, she looks like a beauty queen in this show.
Do you know when they're going to be airing that? I mean, do we have time to read the whole series?
Oh, I just closed up the page. It's probably going to be September if it's
we could do that.
New
we could
series.
Totally do that.
All right. August, September. I'm making that up. Anyway, but I'll give you an answer in a minute. Let's move on to Book Report, everybody. And okay. Chris Cassell, let's start with you. What do you want to tell us about?
So I am going to read or report on a book that I read that's by a local creator. It's called Vile. It could also be called Vile Legends of Thunder Valley. That's nowhere in this printing, but when I looked it up online, that's how it's distinguished online. It's from Crow Song Productions, and it is written by Richard Paul Davis, and it has a few artists. The first chunk of the story is by Francis Nugget. And then the second half is by Antonio Brandao, with colors by Eleonora De La Rosa and Ian Johnson on letters. So it's an interesting book because I'm not entirely sure what happened with the production, but the first 18 pages is one artist that I really, really enjoyed. That would be the Francis Nugget sequence. And then the artist that took over for the last two chapters is solid, but there's some storytelling issues that kind of lost me in a couple places. So the overall concept is that there's a Native American woman who is kidnapped by this guy who is, let's see, his name's Clem, I believe. And you get like some flashbacks to her life, and then you get some mythology set into play as well. And so all of that building sequence is really interesting. And then when the story flips over to a new artist, you get this new subplot about a couple guys that are hunting down the Clem guy, and he's got a horrible past where basically wherever he goes he kills people in the worst ways possible, and they're just trying to right those wrongs. And so he's kind of supernatural, not really, sort of. It's just that he's done so many horrible things that different people have cursed him. And there's an interesting idea that I really enjoyed where nobody can kill him in this land because the curses of other gods from previous lands that he visited prevent him from dying unless it's a very horrible death. So, like, I like that idea. That's really good. The second half of the book suffers from, what would you theater types call it, blocking? When you're trying to, like,
the staging.
Because there's certain sequences where I'm just like, I'm not entirely sure what happened there. So the storytelling, the plotting is stronger for me, whereas just the switch in art just kind of gave me a speed bump in my enjoyment.
Gotcha.
I kind of look at this as like a proof of concept. I really like where they're going with it. I would like to see them kind of remaster it and actually expand it quite a bit, because there's certain mysteries that they don't really explain. And there's just a couple arcs of characters that I feel were a little incomplete. But I like what's in the bones here, and I would like to see more.
Cool.
It's $9.99. It's essentially a little mini trade paperback. It's only 56 pages, I believe. So it's a little overpriced, but it is creator-owned, self-published. So against that comparison, we have a lot of books that are way smaller than this that are twice the size, twice the price. You can do the first chapter on Comicology. That is the chapter by the artist that I really like. So that's like $2, I think. So I do recommend that. But yeah, this is something that we carry in the store, and it's worth giving a quick look to.
Cool.
So that is Vile.
Wow, thank you, Chris. So Cole Hernaday, Preacher Season 3 will premiere Sunday, June 24th AMC.
Yeah,
so
we don't
soon.
Have time.
Very soon.
All right, yeah. So what do you want to tell us about this week, Cole?
Well, I want to talk about the latest iteration of Jeff Lemire's Black Hammer, called Black Hammer Age of Doom. I really enjoyed the first series, and Chris and I were talking off mic before we started tonight how it never really had an appeal to him because it's very clearly an analog to Marvel and DC superhero teams, and I totally am in agreement with that, and I usually shy away from those kind of books.
And I'm just saturated, so...
have you met me? Hi, I'm Cole Hornaday.
They're actually shaking hands.
Yes, but I have thoroughly enjoyed Black Hammer. The original Black Hammer series was about these Golden Age type, or more like Silver Age type heroes, and they are fighting this big godlike being over the city, and they their main champion, Black Hammer, sacrifices himself in this, I believe it's like, they're fighting this being called what? The Anti-God. So very Kirby-esque kind of things. And there's a tremendous explosion. And they all wake up in this little, almost Stephen King type small town called Rockwood, and you know have been there for years when we drop in on the story. Well, that's the original Black Hammer story concluded kind of awkwardly. And I know that Lemire had said it's coming back, and he's done a couple other short stories and minis, but what I didn't realize is that they were going to be tied together. So in the miniseries Sherlock Frankenstein, we meet Black Hammer's daughter, Lucy Weber. And in the meantime, she's been trying to figure out what happened to her father, who was the original Black Hammer, and also what happened to the original team of superheroes. She finds his hammer and assumes the mantle and then gets zapped to where? Yeah, Rockford as well. And so that's where we kind of pick up, is that she's in the Black Hammer suit. She's as puzzled as why they are there and why they are stuck in this contained small town as well. But in her efforts to try to escape, she gets zapped into this hell dimension. And you know, these are all things that we've seen before in a lot of other stories, but in Jeff Lemire's hands, there's a certain charm and gentleness to the story that I really like. It's like he's telling the stories that I read when I was younger, but he's telling them better than they were told then. I guess that's the best way to describe it. I also just think Lemire is a really, really gifted storyteller, and I will continue to follow Black Hammer, Age of Doom, and their other iterations. Oh, by the way, it's also drawn by Dean Ormston. Colors and inks by Dave Stewart and Todd Klein is the letterer, I think. I think so. Anyway, I'm enjoying it. Chris, do you know, is it going to be another mini or is it going to be an ongoing series?
I bet you it's a mini because that seems to be the structure they're going for.
I also think that he's just trying to structure his time as a creator as best he can because he's in demand right now. Yeah, he's writing a lot of stuff for the big...
Got like five new projects. Yeah. He's doing the Century again.
Yeah.
Just another analog. Hey.
Right. And I got to admit, he's good at analogs. So,
all right. Black Hammer, Age of Doom. Thank you, Cole. And finally, Nicole, what do you got for us?
So I read Cole's favorite comic ever, and that's Deadpool number one by Scotty Young and Nick Klein. It came out the week of our recording.
How can it be my favorite comic book ever when I've never read it?
Because you love Deadpool, so every Deadpool comic is always your favorite.
I thought for this week I could dodge the Deadpool, but... just the
really?
One time.
Did you really have that thought?
I've had no, yeah, because people have been giving me a bad time about seeing the movie. So,
I feel so evil right now.
Yeah, you
okay.
Should.
So,
I don't know
this
how you
is
can sleep at night
soundly like a baby. So Deadpool number one is a jumping on point. It gives you a little synopsis in the beginning of he had tried to be kind of a good guy for a while and he decided that didn't work, so he mind wiped himself. So now we're getting kind of a fresh take, and it's a way for Scotty Young to just do whatever he wants to do. Apparently in the back it says that he's been bugging Marvel since he was doing the Oz books to try to write Deadpool, and they were like nope. And then finally they're like, yeah. So he's super excited about it. I had high expectations for this series because Scotty Young does I Hate Fairyland, and it's just magical. It's wonderful. And his humor is really fun, and it's over the top, ridiculous, wacky. And I found that it wasn't like laugh out loud funny, but there is a lot of stuff in there that's going to be in an epic, wacky scale that is going to be really fun. And I'm not sure if I should give any plot points because this first issue really is establishing like what's going to go forward. And it was kind of a fun experience to see what unfolded. The beginning of the issue, at least, just starts with him doing like another hit because he's a mercenary. He's out to has a contract to murder somebody since he's back to those old things. And Negasonic Warhead, is that her name? From the movie specifically shows up, and she's kind of like his secretary. And of course, it's got meta situations and referring to the fact that Scotty Young pulled that from the movie because he's not a creative person or something like that. Like there's like some kind of like writer self-deprecating jokes as well. And he likes to do Of course, it's Deadpool, so you like to pull in meta things.
Of course.
So overall, I would say that it didn't quite meet my personal expectations, and I'm still excited to see what will unfold. So I'm not really let down by the fact that I wasn't like rolling on the floor laughing hysterically, because it did have a pretty high bar for me. And so I don't think that it's fair to say like, it's terrible, I'm canceling everything. You know, I'm really looking forward to see where the arc goes because of the special things that happen in there that I won't tell anybody.
Especially. All right. Cool.
Yes.
Deadpool number one. I get confused with all these number
ones. There's too many number ones, and there's been a lot of Deadpool stuff. So
it has been almost 2 years since the last Deadpool number
but
one.
All of it is of high Marvel quality.
Yeah, I mean, I like low common denominator stuff sometimes, and so there you go.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Cool. Thank you, Nicole. Well, that is Book Report, and that's our show. Pardon me. Coming up is quiz time, but before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, where you can also buy tickets to The Panel Jumper live coming up Friday, June 22nd in West of Lennon. Check it out, thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comic Extension here, 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsengine.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or however you get your shows at perfectboundpodcast.com. My mouth was saying shows, my brain was saying podcasts, and I almost said something else.
That's not what it translated to.
All right, and send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. Now, friends, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time this week. Our questions come to us from Mr. Chris Casso. Lay it on us, Chris.
I couldn't think of a catchy title for this one because I was going to say, like, not an option, because this is all about, we were talking about Resident Alien, so possible optionable comic books.
Yeah.
But not an option doesn't work because they're all optioned. So, first question.
Optionable?
Optional.
Inoptionable.
Oh.
Objectionably optionable.
Okay, there you go.
Hey, live to serve, pal.
There you
here
go.
Here for you.
Question number one. Optioned by Tom Hardy's company, Hardy, Son, and Baker, this sci-fi series is set 10 years after the arrival of vast alien presences that stand on the Earth's surface that do not move or communicate and appear not to acknowledge human life in society. The series follows the silent pressure and strange changes they exert on global communities from China to the Arctic Circle. What is this comic series?
Is it Trees?
It is. Warren Ellis's Image series Trees.
Sounds like a Doctor
Who. You know what I thought you were talking about, though?
What?
Was Jack Kirby's Celestials.
Oh. Hey, that'd be a great way to do it, actually. Yeah.
Everything's an analog or derivative or whatever. Anyway, number two.
Number two. Houston Films has bought the option for a TV series based on this graphic novel series that is a mixture of steampunk, alternative history, and thriller genres. Set in the world in which France won the Napoleonic Wars and invaded Britain, and in which the world is populated mostly by anthropomorphic animals. The main character is Detective Inspector Archibald Archie LeBrock of Scotland Yard, a British anthropomorphic badger.
Oh.
What is this series?
Is it Granville?
It is Granville, yes. The Hugo Award-nominated British graphic novel series written and drawn by Brian Talbot.
I think I'm on, like, Jeopardy. Yeah. What is Granville?
Yeah. Next question. Movie and TV production and finance company Damarest announced in early 2015 that it was developing a TV series based on this 15-issue comic book series from Marvel that debuted in early 2014. The series resolves around New York City years after the undead plague breaks out, but focuses on a developing war between zombies and vampires, with humans caught in the crossfire. In November of 2015, AMC acquired the TV rights on the series, probably for strategic reasons. What is it?
Is it the Marvel Zombies run?
Nope.
Yeah, I don't remember vampire stuff.
Shall I?
Yeah, go for it.
George A. Romero's Empire of the Dead.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, right. Yep. It was Marvel, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet you AMC picked it up just because they're like, we don't want a competition right now.
Yeah.
Next question. This upcoming animated television series from Netflix is produced by Silvergate Media and Mercury Filmworks, and the show will follow the adventures of a fearless blue-haired girl who, along with her deer fox named Twig, travels travels to the world of Trollberg, where she conquers even the most dangerous monsters.
It's Hilda.
It is Hilda, the award-winning British kids comic book series written and illustrated by Luke Pearson, and published by Nobrow Press.
Would that be like an animated or a
live
action?
Yep, it is animated.
That would be super cute.
First thing I said, upcoming animated.
Oh, sorry.
Last question. Back in 2015, Universal Cable Productions announced that it had teamed up with Dark Horse Entertainment in a first look deal that would focus on developing and producing scripted programming from Dark Horse's library. One of those projects, besides Resident Alien, includes an Eisner Award-winning series that follows the character Ronald Lithgow, coming to terms with his new form and trying to live a normal life after his subconscious is transplanted into a stone body by aliens.
Concrete.
Yep.
Concrete is one of my favorite characters.
Paul Chadwick's Concrete is in the lineup. It may even be here by 2019. Well,
2019, that's the future.
That is the future.
All right.
But we live in the future.
Well, thank you, Chris. That is Quiz Time, and that is our show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.